We have 10 minutes, and I was just going to say one very, very brief thing, and I don't even expect you to answer unless you would like to, and then I'd very much like to throw it open. This is a great series of presentations about moving beyond individual characters to collective actors, moving beyond individual isolated phenomena to structures, to understanding structure and process in this society, moving beyond the document to understand the structures of representation that illuminate the structures of power and control that gave birth to it. My one question that maybe doesn't have an answer is, in North America, can we move this outside of the realm of art? Can we move this outside of the realm of the scholarly? And can we make this a part of the media that people encounter every day? If that happens, I think it happens in sports, where people have a very clear sense of individual protagonists, but also of the business power and control structures, and where they also have a very strong sense of economics and also of history. But I'm not sure that sports is a model for a revolution. Anyway, would any of you like to follow up on anything before we throw it open to our tired and wonderful audience?
I'd say if we got questions,
okay, Celia, a mic is coming to you.
Hi, thank you. I just actually have more of a comment, and it's about the first presentation, which I unfortunately only saw a very short portion of. And it has to do with the presentation of the images of Black Death. And I know you gave a disclaimer and a trigger warning, but I just want to say, as somebody who had to leave, that I think I'm thinking a lot about what KJ brought up this morning about the moment in which we find ourselves, the conversations we need to be having about the 21st century and the circulation of imagery. And I don't think it's enough to simply give a disclaimer. I don't want to see Eric Garner die anymore. And I can't even have a real conversation about the presentation because I missed it. And in fact, both of us had to leave, and then we had a really extensive conversation outside about how difficult it is to have those images circulated in a context like this. So I just needed to raise that, because we are here talking about poetics and politics, and that just seems like a problem to me. Sorry.
I really appreciate you saying that, and I do understand it. I thought a lot about not showing any of those images, and maybe that would have been the better decision to make. In the end, I felt like perhaps this would be a safe enough space for people, and that it would be hard to make the point that I wanted to make, which I'm sorry you didn't get to hear. But I take that very seriously. I take that comment very seriously, and I respect that. And thank you for making it.
Question? Yes, in the front.
Well, just in relation to that point, I thought that your exhibition and the work that you showed actually brought those points home about, you know, the shooting and, you know, the animation that you did without us seeing those things. I mean, I mean, obviously, I'm looking at them from a different position, and but I think, in a way, your work itself is brilliantly exploring those crimes without showing the visual evidence in the classic kind of surveillance or news reportage visuals.
In the middle back there.
Thanks. I had something to say, but I'm going to say one thing before I say that, which is that I have to say that the symptom, what you said was Sharon, about this being a safe enough space. Seems like the craziness of our world, in which that's like a symptom. It's a symptom of this language around exceptionalism, because the fact of those images is that some people are in a safe space and some people aren't in streets and in universities and not. So for some people, there's no safe space. I guess I just needed to say that. And that's not that's the rhetoric we live in. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, I even see the kind of framework in which we give presentations about racism and horrific, the criminal injustice system. And we're giving these presentations and we're framing them in all of these ways. And this is a symptom of that, right? That system of the kind of academic language around social justice, actually, and not revolutionary change. I could say a lot more, I guess. But I guess I had maybe I should leave it there, but I did have a strange question to Marty about the microphones and the amplification, but I'll ask it to you later.
I saw a hand in front and then one on the side.
Thank you. Will somebody else? Is it okay? Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentations. Just because this thread is unfolding, Sharon, around your work, which I think is a wonderful exhibition, but I just want to observe a couple of things. And my question really is not about the end point of the decision to show or not show. In some of my work in the aftermath of atrocity, I've been very, very wary of showing the necessary images, which is not an argument not to take those images, but maybe what's useful would be to understand the thinking and the unfolding of the ethics which lead you to make this particular decision for here. It might be a different decision for someone else. And also just to observe that it seems to be people of colour who feel impelled to speak in that context.
I think that's a great observation. I actually am not surprised that people of color have responded in the way that they have. I think maybe I was wrong to show those images. I seriously considered not doing it, as I said before. And to me, the specificity of those images in relation to the argument I was trying to make was important. I decided not to show the end of the Eric Garner video. I decided not to show the, very much of any of the other ones. I wanted to show the Laquan McDonald recording because I think the recording was so important to the fact of his conviction. And I wanted to argue against, in a way, incarceration as an answer to these problems. And I felt like without the, without the experience of re-seeing that video, to then talk about the conviction didn't make as much sense. But I acknowledge and knew very well before this conversation that I am in a much different position relative to those images than a person of color would be. So I'm listening to that, and I get that. And maybe sometimes making an academic or even a political point, and my point being an abolitionist point and not wanting to leave the justice system to do its work in the way that it does, without arguing against it, could be better made in another way. So, and I'd be happy to entertain any conversation about that with anyone who has any ideas about that as well. Because my point is not to be exploitative or to do any kind of, not to be exploitative and, you know, not to aestheticize those images or ignore their significance in any way, so.
I wanted to make a comment, but I saw that you wanted to.
I don't want to derail this talk, but I do, I hope that you and others will consider that it's not necessarily because I'm a black person, African American, not just like a person of color. This is what I am. But I would hope that images such as these would not, being challenged by them, being enraged by them in this forum and others, is not because of my coloredness. It's because of my humanity. And I do have a problem with saying, I'm sorry that people of color found this challenging, because it's not that, it's the humanity.
I find them inhumane as well, and challenged, and challenging and upsetting as a not a person of color. So I agree with you entirely, and that is part of the point of showing them, is to address this situation of their existence, to try to do something about the fact that they exist.
I'm going to continue on this thread of conversation. I think that I feel very clear that your intention is very much an act of solidarity, and that you're, as a white person troubled by, you know, this, the criminal justice system, I really see how that's coming, where that's coming from, a good intention place. I'm very reminded, I felt troubled not just by the images of violence in the beginning, but also by some of the image of the hoodie with the bullet holes in it and some of the artworks as well. And I was reminded by a debate that really came up, or a conversation and protest around the Whitney Biennial in 2017, where an artist, Dana Schutz, made a painting of a photograph of Emmett Till. And there was a lot of pain and outcry and protest of around this painting, and the artist, a white woman, spoke about, you know, making it from a place of empathy, but ultimately it caused a lot of pain and hurt for people. And so I guess I bring that up to just to say, you know, bring it to a larger context of also how these images circulate. It's not just the footage, it's the artwork that's created out of it. Where is it shown? What's the context? What is it doing? And just wanted to also reiterate that I felt uncomfortable with this what was raised in the beginning about the spectacle of Black Death, and hope this is an opportunity for us to think about, especially as white people, how we can continue to do this work, not shy away from it, but really, you know, fall into it and be deeply in solidarity and kind of search where it's coming from. And yeah, thank you.
Hello. First, thank you. I thought your presentation, or this is for the first presentation as well. I thought your presentation was really powerful, and I loved the work. My question is, how do you see your position as a white artist and educator dealing with the subject matter you do?
So, thank you. So I've been working on a critique, and what I hope is an activist critique of the criminal justice system, since about 2000, 2001. I've interviewed incarcerated people for different interactive documentary projects. I see my work as anti-racist and feminist, and so that's how I see my position. And when this project is different from my other projects in that it's not as directly based on direct testimony. I mean, you didn't see what's in the website because there wasn't time to show it, but there's a great deal of direct testimony there. And generally, my work is interview-based, and I try to create interfaces that provide access to the statements of people of color and white people who are affected by the injustices of the criminal punishment system. So that's how I see my position. My strategy for this work has been you can't speak about the criminal justice system without addressing policing. I am deeply troubled by the problems of police violence, particularly against people of color. I wanted also to, most of my work is online, and I wanted to do something that could be in public spaces. I was genuinely inspired by Beverly Henry's op-ed piece about Betsy Ross, and I wanted to materialize that in a way that it could circulate to different audiences other than the audiences that generally see my work, which are generally more technologically and economically and academically enfranchised people. And I wanted to do things that could go out into different kinds of non-electronic public spaces. So, but with the goal of it being a statement, an anti-racist statement, and a statement about basically abolishing the criminal justice system as we see it now, which I think has to be from the ground, all the way down to the ground.
I see a hand, yes.
I'd like to return to this question that Marty was asking. How do you represent the unrepresentable? And I'm really interested in that myself. And I'm thinking it addresses some other elements that have come across on the panel. When one does try to represent the unrepresentable, maybe sometimes that can mean reaffirming violence or perpetuating oppression. So, and all of you were trying to ask that question and maybe escape from it or find alternatives to it in different ways. And whether that would be, for instance, focusing on relationality within social movements. But I'm wondering if temporality is also an important category here in terms of pushing documentary away from representing what has been, which has a tendency to reify potentially, toward opening up like pockets of futurity within a reinvented documentary. Like how can it generate, how can it produce, how can it create a different world rather than risking that kind of colonial or extractive perpetuation of violence?
I guess I can speak to that. I mean, I think this whole conference in a way has spoken to that, hasn't it? I mean, many, many of the works that we've watched have a kind of a futuristic element to them. The work that I was describing, I would say, tried to more, it wasn't ahistorical, and I think we do need to historicize. So the trick is exactly how to then create a useful tension. I think for me, one of the things that's important in that regard, like I kind of referenced a little bit, but I think certainly Masumi talks about that opening the space of the future and the past at the same time is what you have to do. You don't open one without the other or you run into trouble. And I think that's how I understand it. Yeah. Speak to that.
I'm so moved by this conversation and what it's demanding of all of us, right, in terms of what we, the words we speak and how we talk to each other with images. And Marty, I just wanted to thank you. You know, I am originally from Seattle, and when I was born, I was very aware of the different Native American tribes in Seattle, but we used to do the drive down the coast one with my dad every year to go visit his family, and I've never heard the name of the Native Americans who lived here, and that, talk about invisible, and I'm thinking about, you know, how and why I chose the images that I chose for my talk this morning, and there were so many choices that were rushed and done with expediency and taken from like the sort of the top of the, and I actually had someone who was helping me, and I said, I don't want to show the beating of Rodney King. Will you get a photo for me that is a portrait of him? And then when the photo came through, I was like, is that a portrait? His shirt is off. And because it was resonating with what I was thinking about for all of us of like how we look in each other's eyes and how we see those eyes, I was like, okay. And in some ways, the thought process was not a deep enough thought process because it's not coming from a place of the same relationship to the pain of that portrait, right? And in the same way that we had our interaction, my the way in which my relationship to Saudi Arabia is limited and 4 years old when I went there and the people that I met there and what that video meant at that time when I intersected with it, it's completely different for what it means to a person who is struggling with what is happening now in that place and knows the actual people. So, I mean, I think that takes us back to this thing around subjectivity, but one in which we all, like, the blind spot situation is so intense. You know, I mean, one of the reasons that I reached to put the video at the end was I get really, for me, it's so painful how often within American settings we only stay within American issues, right? And it's like the world is out there and we are only still talking about this. But how do you reach into the world without making these sort of grave missteps of completely not understanding the complexity of situations, because none of us is capable of the level of depth of understanding that is necessary to not misstep. And I think that's the thing, is like, how do we stay in this space together and, like, you know, find ways to sort of step towards a new future. But I like the idea that let's all make completely different imagery now and, like, leave all the other imagery behind. I'm bringing this to you because why not?
Yeah, so I'm interested in this common ground, which is a critique of capitalism, because we can get, I think it's obviously America's really fucked up on so many levels, and racism is one of them. I would say that capitalism is a common enemy. So I'm interested in knowing how you brought up manufacturing when you were talking about your metadata, and you were looking at prison labor. And I just wonder if a strategy, one strategy would just be somehow disclosing industrial patterns. When I did the research for Haroon Farooqi's prison images, we specifically researched the manufacturers of these quote-unquote non-lethal devices, and it just so happened that it coincided with the Department of Corrections in California wanting to be proudly displaying that they were now using non-lethal modes of discipline. So it just became a really good strategy in, and it was not like a, whatever, dyadic conflict. It was triangulated. So just want to see what you have to say about manufacturing this problem.
I mean, one thing I'd say about that is just the lack of public infrastructure that we have, the largest, like the market leader for police body cameras, and then the resulting media archive is Taser International through Axon and Evidence.com, which is probably one of the largest media archives in the world right now, because they're just local police departments from all over the world are just uploading all of their body cam footage to one company that's using it for predictive policing as well. So the difference between uploading a public video to YouTube or them hosting it locally is really the difference between like a real difference in opacity, transparency. And so, I mean, I think that kind of shows like what, I mean, I think maybe one of the questions for futurity is really modeling what like that other kind of infrastructure could look like.
Yes.
I have a question that is coming from this morning and the idea that an image is a relationship and an ongoing one that extends in past, present, and future, which I'm going to think of as the present. And in order to make this question make sense, I want to reference two things. So one is a book, Whereas, by Layli Long Soldier, which is in many ways an apology, or talks about apologies. Layli, I've seen when she comes to read in spaces, people make land acknowledgements and name the tribes that are there. And she's made a comment about the fact that that's not enough. It becomes incredibly tiring and inadequate. Part of it is because of the tense inside of the question. That is, these people have lived here in the past, but people are still living and dying all of the time. The second thought in my head is related to a book called Electric Santeria by Aisha Bilosho Jesus. And I'm thinking about the ghosts and the presences that come with images of the dead, the co-presences that are with us. A question that I have is to all of you, what is your relationship to the dead that are still present? Because that seems to me the fundamental issue. When I am with the dead and I did not look at your images, I closed my eyes and I cried. If like another comment in there, but and I thought about going home and going through various kinds of rituals and self-care for myself to be able to continue to work and live in the world. And so my question has to do with that for all of you, and even moving into the different kind of image of the metadata. what are your relationships to the dead in the present?
Maybe I'll try that. It's a very difficult question. One, I mean, on a non-personal level, I could say in a way metadata is exactly those ghosts. In a way, the archive comes back and haunts us. On a personal level, I would say that for me, that's been a ongoing journey. My last film I made was it was called Hiroshima Bound, and I was kind of postulating the sort of images that I grew up with, like the mushroom cloud distributed by the Department of Defense and Department of Energy, against these the testimonies offered by Hiroshima survivors. And so there was a situation where my wife called me from her high school, and she said, you know, there's this group of survivors, they come to New York and they talk to kids. And so I said, fine. So I called them and I got in touch and I brought them to my school, and they met with kids at my school. And I talked to them about their practice and stuff. And then I decided I would go to Ground Zero, to Hiroshima, and interview somebody. And I got in touch with somebody who was a survivor but didn't normally talk about it. And I met them at Ground Zero, where the bomb had dropped in 45, and I started talking to them, and I had the camera rolling. And at a certain point, I realized that this wasn't the right thing to do, and that I was asking them somehow to represent this disaster to me as a filmmaker. So I just stopped, and I just quit, and I totally changed the direction of the film in a way. and started interrogating my own complicity in a different way. So I guess for me, I would say that it's a constant ethical interrogation, the relationship with the dead.
Yeah, I thank you for that comment and question. First, I want to say that I'm glad you said what you said about acknowledging is not enough. And I really hear that. And I also think explaining is not enough. So I want to apologize to you and to anyone else who was unable to stay in the room during the showing of those images. I'm sorry? Oh, okay, but I thank you for quoting her. and I've often felt that during acknowledgments of unceded land at the beginning of events, which happen often, that I ought to apologize, not just nod in agreement, but I certainly want to apologize to you all for today. The way I think about the dead is, or what my relationship to the dead is what you asked, is that I want them back. And I think some of this work with the flags and the hoodies and the targets is about that. I want to rematerialize them. I know not in the real, but in the symbolic, to kind of re-manifest their presence so that we are all accountable to them. So if that's a failure, I'm glad for the feedback, but that's sort of where that's coming from. But I want them back. That's my only relationship to the dead.
I have something I need to think about. And that's why I proposed a work in progress, to get things to think about. So thank you for that one.
If I could just make a very short comment by way of a thought in response to what you said. I think that there's a way in which you can use archival images to bring people back to life, at least symbolically, where it isn't a scene of their death or their murder, but it's scenes of them as human beings doing what human beings do in their communities. And to me, that's tremendously important, the fact that many images of people have the function of at least uniting us with them for a time.